Welcome to the Endurance Town USA Project. This podcast, along with our blogs and adventure team, travel around the world creating and sharing the stories of humans changing lives through endurance sports. Today, we're introducing a new mini-series, Endurance is a State of Mind, featuring the stories of six beautiful humans who use endurance sports and mindset training to live to their potential. We explore their why and gather golden nuggets of inspiration and tactics for how to build your own best body and mind. This is Endurance Town USA.
Bring it back. Good morning. Okay. Good morning. Good morning, my friend Morgan. How are you?
I'm doing well. Busy day, busy times. It's hot. I know it's probably hot where you are too, but it's super hot here. I think we had like in North Carolina, Jacksonville, North Carolina, the heat index is 105 today.
Okay, well, just wait, because here we are on Endurance Town USA podcast. The conversation is about endurance is a state of mind. And this conversation's about to get next level hot. We might burn the building down. When you and I are together, that's what we do.
Hey, ain't nothing wrong with that. Like, we got to, I mean, that's the good is with finding your tribe, finding your people. They supposed to bring value to you and just, you know, that's the key. And that's hard to find that. But when you do, like, you got to make sure you cultivate it even more.
Oh, dude, I'm so stoked you're in my life. I can't wait to talk to you today. And I want to share with our audience a little bit about your backstory. So that's where we're going to go first. And then we're going to get into the mental game of our lives and of our sport. But for the audience, tell me a little bit about who you are. So I want to know where you're raised, what your upbringing kind of looked like. And, you know, as a young person, what was your experience?
Man, well, I was born in St. Louis. I lived in East St. Louis, probably the first, you know, young adult portion of my life. Then we moved to Kansas City, Missouri, and stayed there. When we first moved there, we were living with my grandmother. But my grandmother and mother, I guess we weren't seeing eye to eye. I was a child then, so I don't know. This is all based off what my mom has told me. And so we had to move out, but we had nowhere to go. So
who's we? You and mom, or did you have siblings?
Me, my brother. And then my mom was pregnant with my little sister at the time, right? And so we basically went into shelters, lived, you know, being homeless. We lived in shelters for to me, a long time. I don't know if it was months or a year or years. I really don't know. I just know that we lived in like two or three shelters. I remember one is only for women. Another one we lived at is one of my teachers at that time would serve or volunteer to serve the food at the kitchen. And so I remember going down there and helping. I remember living in the attic. Whereas there was other people there, and my mom kept us really close, and it was just a totally different experience. And it doesn't even feel, even though it was like probably hard for my mom because she was the parent at the time, but like it didn't feel hard to me, right? It was she made us really safe and always was there for us and made us. So I don't look back at it and say like I see crazy people, because like some homeless people have some mental issues, right? That's not a secret. But like I never had like a negative experience there. It was every time I went to those, what I can remember, it was always so giving. People were just so always able to like, what can we do for you? How can we help you? Right. And then I remember serving the food to the other homeless people in the kitchen as a little kid. And it was just, I was just wanting to help. I just wanted to be a part of that. And it could be who I am today. Right. And so over years.
How old were you?
I don't know. Okay. I never asked that. I need to ask that question. Like, I don't, I think, I know I was in elementary school, like late elementary, early middle, somewhere in that area. And it was an experience. And, you know, it didn't really like dawn on me until I became an adult, how privileged I was to have to be where I'm at right now. And how privileged I was then to have the mother that I have, right? Mm-hmm. And so she raised us and then, you know, I've been through a lot. I mean, I don't know how deep you want me to go, but like...
You went through some things.
Yeah. Like most people thought I'd be dead by now. You know, My the brother.
Were you naughty?
Yeah.
I think that's a yes.
Most of my friends are in the penitentiary or dead or murderers. Like, they are on a whole nother level. I get uncomfortable being around some of those old acquaintances just because I know the lifestyle. And I made a choice to leave it when I joined the Marine Corps. And
what age is that?
18. Yeah, straight out of high school, a little bit longer. But the brother I told you about wasn't so fortunate to get out of that stuff. And so he was murdered in, I want to say, 08, 09. He was shot in the face.
This is your little brother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My little brother. He was living that lifestyle, man. It's like, you know,
choices,
right? You know, I did everything that I could to, like, hey, come move with me. Here's some money, you know. And it was just like, I know my mom has, we have talked about this a lot. It was like, we sad that he gone, but we happy at the same time because he doesn't have to suffer because he was, you know, I think he was doing drugs, maybe crack or something like that. He had elevated different drugs. And yeah, every time I saw him, it just got worse and worse and worse. And I remember one story where I went home and I went to go see him. My mom was in my truck. I drove to this place and said, well, where's Larry? And he's here. And then so we went over there to the house and he was on the porch. I was like, man, what's up? He looked real bad, you know, like crack addict. That's what he looked like to me. And I was like, what's up, man? I just was seeing what you're doing. My mom was, you know, she stayed in the car and she just wanted me to know where he was. And I wanted to see him. And so this guy comes out and is like, yelling like, Larry, where's my mother? Money, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I got my mom with me. Like, what's going down? Like, yeah. And I live that hood life. So, you know, I'm a Marine. It takes a lot to, like, intimidate me in general. And so we left. I like Larry, he's like, I'm going to be cool. And I left, right? We drove around, but I see the dude start coming out walking. So I took my mom around the block.
Okay.
Right. And I parked up the street. I said, stay here. Do not get out the car. Mm-hmm. Yes. I went back. Right. And then the dude came out and I'm like, you know, what's the problem, bro? What's going on? He said, your brother stole some money from me. He owed me some money. I said, how much he owe you, bro? Like, he's like $50. Right. He said, and I started walking up his stairs. He said, you better get the fuck off my stairs or I'm going to shoot you and him. Mm-hmm. I said, bro. And I think it's around the time of like, I had been going through something anyway, and I had seen some stuff anyway in general. And so I was like, bro, this is what I do for a living. And this is what you're going to do. Pull it. Like, I was in that. It was my little brother. Like, if you're going to pull it, pull it. Like, I'm from that mentality. And it may sound stupid in the moment, but when you do, I die for a stranger. I die for my family member. Right.
Right.
Because it wasn't worth it. And I was close. And I was close enough to him that it wouldn't. He wouldn't have been able to pull it. So, like, it'd have been a whole nother, it would have been like some ninja stuff maybe going on. Or, you know, we don't know what would have happened, but glad he was just, and I think he was just scared and bluffing. He thought I was going to come up there and do something to him, but like, I ain't about that life. You know what I mean? And he came down, I gave him the little money, and he still was talking crazy and stuff, but like, that's what my brother did. He would rob people, right? And just like even friends. Okay. I mean, I got 1,000 stories about all this stuff. But yeah, I just needed to get away from Kansas City, man. I just had to get out of there. It's a gloomy place. Even when I go back, I don't like going home. It's just
Your
not enjoyable. She is. She and my is. Dad.
Okay.
And it was, she don't want to leave. She done bought the lights on the side of her and everything. She still living in the hood, but like, you know, She had this house, I think it's worth like $24,000 brand, you know, back in the 40s. And, you know, she got that. And as the houses get tore down on the left and the right of her, she's just bought a lot. Because most of the time the lots are into like, they just owe back taxes and you just go pay the back taxes and it's yours. Right. So she's just buying up the land in that area. I don't think it's worth it, damn, but it's still having something when you've had nothing. Right. That house was when we moved in. We were in, like I said, in the shelters, it was a Section 8 house. And so we met the landlord and we stayed there. I mean, that's the first house we've ever lived in Kansas City and the last actually. Wow. And when the landlords didn't pass, the wife just said, this is yours and just pay us, you know, get the loan. And it was like $30,000 for the house. And my mom was to fix it up and everything. And this is where she stays now. And so I don't really like going home. She is. She don't think she is sometimes, but she is. I tell her all the time.
You have another sibling too, right? Then she was pregnant with another younger sibling.
Correct.
Okay.
On my mom's side, correct. I have my sister, Ashley, and she was, I have other brothers and sisters on my dad's side. You know, they weren't together like that. You know what I mean? In a relationship. So yeah. Yeah, that's the little bit of it. Like I could tell stories for hours.
Where were you in the military? Were you scooting around or what? What division of the military?
Well, I mean, I'm a Marine. If everybody already know, the few, the proud, the Marine, hell, death and destruction is what we rain on our enemies. Right. This is how we get down. And so I've been everywhere to me, especially being, inner city kid that ain't never really had nothing. Yeah. And so left there, went to boot camp in San Diego, California. Went from San Diego, California to Camp Lejeune, where I'm at now, actually. But it was my first duty station here, and my school. Correct. Went from there to Japan. Went from Japan to Went to Japan, back to Kansas City. I was stationed about an hour away from my house. Then I went back to Japan, and then. After I left, I went to California again, Miramar, or San Diego, California. Left there, went to Albany, Georgia. And during this time, I've been to Greece, Canada, Mexico, Ireland, Afghanistan, Kuwait. During that mix, I was in Albany. That's when I deployed to Afghanistan in 2011. Was there a little bit under a year, right? And at Bagram Air Station. One of the super fobs, and then came back and was in Albany and then met my wife and then, went from there. Where the hell did I go? I came back here. Yeah, that's where I went to California from Albany. I went back to California to Oceanside, California, right where they start RAM and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Camp Pendleton. Right. And then I came back here.
Now you're back in North Carolina.
Correct. And basically, I'll retire from the same location that I actually started at when I'm my first duty station.
How many years before you retire?
Before I retire? Well, I'll retire next May.
Next May.
Next May.
Yeah, I've been in
a little bit over 23, closer to 24.
Wow.
Yeah.
Woo, that's a minute.
it feel like yesterday, man.
Does it?
I'm so like, you put me in charge. Y'all crazy.
So you're in North Carolina, you're married, and you have a daughter, I believe.
I have four daughters, actually. Four daughters. And I got you. The one you're talking about is the Munchkin, that's my road dog. Yeah, she goes, she's everywhere with daddy, and she already asked since I was, she said, you're gonna be on a phone call, dad? I said, yes. She said, I want to talk to them. I said, I don't think you can talk today, but maybe next time.
She always
wants. Yeah, she always wants to jump on and say hello to people. She loves the people. We always, she has a personality. This is her first week. Like, she went to Vacation Bible School this week. Mm-hmm. And you can just see my personality. Because, I act the fool when I'm out. And so this podcast is probably the comments you go and probably ever see me. When you look at her, I watched her just play and her facial expressions. And it was just... all of them. When you see your kids doing stuff, man, it's just like,
so good.
Like I always tell my wife, I'm like, if we didn't do nothing else right, we did those right.
Exactly.
Because they mean so much, man. So
I love it. So here you are in North Carolina, but somewhere along your military training, you decided to get into endurance sports.
Yeah.
Correct. So at what point did you go from, I'm in the military, boot camp, fitness, and all of the things connected to, your requirements in there for being a badass. But at what point did you say, hey, this endurance sports thing is kind of interesting? What was your segue?
Well, so, because I've always been a physically fit dude, right? Even though I played basketball, not basketball. I was like a cheerleader, a guy cheerleader in high school. I was in ROTC. I was in cross country, track, football. Right. I did all those things. I played football and ran cross country at the same time. Like I always liked doing stuff like that. And even when instead of walking to the store, I'd run to the store or run with my friends. Like that's what we did. We raced all the time and ran from the police a lot. Those two things did that as well. So we were pretty fast and furious back in those days.
Yeah.
And And so I got in the Marine Corps, and like the physical aspect never really, it was always fun. Like I love adventure. Like I love that. Like people have struggled in that area. I was more worried about the academic side because I come from like the inner city where they just ain't that great at the school district type stuff. You know what I mean? And so that was more, I didn't read well. I know now I have dyslexia. I didn't know that then, right? I was in a special class, but I learned differently. So I was bad because like I was bored. Like even now when I'm bored, like I'll drink. So I have to watch that, right? And so like I need to be engaged. And people are like, oh, you're doing a lot. I'm like, to you, I'm doing a lot. But my mind works totally different. Right? This is just a little bit, right?
And this is the speed that you roll, that you perform at. Yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And so I just started like working out. And as a leader, you're in charge of making sure everybody else is fit, right?
Doing PT.
And, correct. Doing physical training and PT or combat fitness, right? And so I would help people, you know, as a way to like, it kept me not getting fat. I'm a big dude. I'm like 220, right? 6'2". And like, we have standards. And so I learned that in order for me to stay in shape, if I just helped people that needed to help themselves, they couldn't help themselves, right? That had some type of issue. So I would work in we call the BCP program, the body composition program, from people that are overweight, maybe have gained, you know, it could be like a, you know, thyroid issue. It could be they had a baby. It could be they just got fat because they just feeding their face. It could be a lot of different issues. But I started kind of working with them and helping people out. And you start to see this transformation. And this was like, through years, it started like 06 type stuff. I started doing that type of stuff. And then when I got to Albany, Georgia, I started to do personal training and teach spin classes, right?
And spin classes? Oh my God.
Yeah. I started teaching spin. They were like, hey, we're going out of town. You want to sub for us? I said, I got no certifications. They said, you're fine. You can ride and you got a whole bunch of energy. You will be okay. Yeah. Right. And they told me what to do and I rocked it, bro. I rocked it so much that, you know, the owner came to me and said, hey, we wanted you to take up the Thursday class. So the Thursday class had nobody coming to it, like one lady. Mm-hmm. Right. When I left, it was full and packed. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I got in doing that. I kind of get some more certifications and, you know, physical trainer and then, you know, therapist assistant and all that stuff. And then when I PCS or moved to California, it's the mecca of all endurance. Mm-hmm. Right. And then I was like,
San Diego County, hell yeah.
Correct. I was like, what is all this? Like this triathlon thing going on.
What is
like,
all this spandex?
Yeah. A whole bunch of cycling. And because I was cycling with the race team in Albany. And I thought I was badass because I was like cycling with the Cat Ones and Cat Twos. Mm-hmm. And then I get out here to the San Diego, California, and they are the slow people compared to the other people in California. You know what I mean? And, you know, maybe a couple of them would be able to hang, but like it was in my coach at that time. He had already told me, like, California ain't Georgia, bro. Like, just so you know, like, you're going to where you're going to have elite, like, world-level pros, right? And so I got there, and I just got into it. I was like, man, this is just cool and everything. And I was like, I can do this. And I started doing triathlon, and it was hard. And, like, everything else seemed like, damn, that was hard. Okay, I want some more, right? And so you do it again, and you like you get better. You just get sucked in. Mm-hmm. And I got to the point where I was like, man, I'm gonna retire. Like, what I want to do with my life? Yeah. And I thought about it. I was like, man, I love fitness, and I'm good with people, right? And so I was like, well, let's try this triathlon coaching thing out, right? And so, you know, I didn't really start swimming a lot. I know I wasn't scared of the water, but I didn't start swimming like I swim now, like 2014. Like, people's like, you've been swimming your whole life, like. No, even though I teach it around the United States now, mm-hmm. right? I've only started officially swimming in 2014. Mm-hmm. And you know, now working with US Masters as well as a lead instructor, and I certify people, right? And so, but like when I go deep into something, I go all in. And so I learned, I take lessons, I shadowed the educational director. Like I do whatever I can to get the knowledge I need to be the best. That's how I roll, right?
So how long have you been doing triathlons? Because that's when you must have started swimming. Is that 2014?
2014.
Okay. And you're like, oh, hey, I want to try a triathlon. I should learn how to swim.
Actually, no. No and no.
I knew Marines are hard-headed. Common. Yeah, what happened?
Marines are hard-headed. I was going to the pool. I could, knowing what I know now, I should.
You didn't drown.
I didn't, but my first triathlon was in open water. And Woo! if you know that coastline up by Pendleton, yeah, that's where trestles and stuff is, hard right? Work. So yeah, it's serious out there. The currents and the waves and the rip currents, all that. So that's where I did my first try. I remember because I thought I was going to die, mm-hmm, right? And I was out there and I finished. It was the longest, most painful try I've ever done. But like, I didn't know how to formally swim, but I made it. Like I had some people tell me, do this, do that. I don't have fear of the water. Like I never had the fear. So it wasn't, I was like, hey, this is going to do it. Like, this is probably stupid, but oh, well. So I woke up that morning after using the bathroom. I said, hey, I'm going to go try this triathlon. I didn't even plan it. Like, I was like, I'm going to go try this. I had signed up. I just knew it was one today. And I was like, oh, I got time. I'll be back. And I left and went and did the triathlon and came back home later. And it was like, I was hooked in. And so I kind of got sucked into that. And then as I was thinking about what I was going to do, I don't know if you know Paula Newby Frazier.
Mm-hmm.
You should. Yeah. And so I was working with her in some event stuff. And so we went to one of the event after parties where they say thank you to all their employees and all that stuff for like doing all the work. I think we were working Pedal to Cause or something like that, or a lifetime race. And I was helping. And she said, Morgan, I got this new thing that Ironman has. I said, what is? She said, it's called Ironman U. You want to be Ironman certified coach? And I was like, nah, I ain't smart enough to be nobody coach. Everything I tell everybody else now, right? The people that tell me. And so one day she convinced me and she was like, hey, I'll set it up. And like, she said, you pay the money and we'll go from there. And I did it. And I ain't never looked back since. And that was in 2014. And I was doing it for the money and for free sometimes. Like I was doing it for free because I was doing it for the money and I wasn't making none. But then it shifted because I wasn't making any. And my mentor, Johnny Bernardo, told me, he's like, the reason you're not successful is because you're not doing it for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get something when you should be giving. You're a coach, mm-hmm, right? And he said, when you do it for the people, everything else will work itself out. So I made that shift. And you see what you see now is that shift is like, it's not about me. And the more I give is literally the bigger I grow.
Yep.
And so like I do that on a daily basis and it has created the career that you see now as Coach Morgan, a people's coach. And now I'm doing voiceovers. Now I'm coaching multiple athletes, some high athlete. I'm coaching I was talking to a group of athletes in Colombia the other day. I got athletes in Argentina and Japan and in India. Like, this is what I do now. This young black kid from the hood, my name is all over the globe.
Yeah. So tracking back a little bit, you have done that same thing. I mean, you're kind of just a born natural servant to humanity, because even when you were young, you were in a homeless shelter serving homeless people.
Yeah.
Living in there. Okay. So that's what you were taught. That's how you were raised. That's what your belief system became when you were a young human. It was role modeled for you, your mom and other people that influenced you, I'm sure other mentors. And then in mm-hmm. your adult career in the military, same thing. You didn't just roll into the military and go, I'm just going to, cruise this thing out. You went for it. You're in leadership in the military. You're not just like, doing the baseline. And then here you are in triathlon as a coach now doing the same thing. So servant leadership is just who you are. It's just, you were just born to do this.
The funny part is like in each one of those scenarios at the beginning, I was doing it for the wrong reasons.
Okay.
Right. I got in trouble a couple of times for lying. I remember lying because I wanted the nuns or something to like bite me a cake or something when we was at the homeless shelter. Right. That didn't work. And then I remember boot camp. I went there and I was all about myself. I'm just, hood guy and tough, I wasn't helping nobody. Yeah. And they broke that real fast. Ooh. That's a whole other story. And so they broke that real fast. And then even triathlon, I came in and like, it's all about the money. It's about me. You need to hire me. You need to hire me. I had this certification. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Every time it was about me and I showed individualism, it never worked. Mm-hmm. I was going against the grain the whole time. And I think that's how the universe works. Mm-hmm. Right. And the moment you do things that are meant to be done, and that's for others because we were put on this earth together. When we started learning how to leverage that, that's powerful.
Yeah.
And so that's what I've learned so far.
Yeah. None of us are here alone. And
no,
we never will be, we come in alone. Yeah. And we may die alone, but we are in between here together, and we need to make that work. And so we can all reach our full potential, right? Collectively, individually, nobody does.
Right. And that's what my job is as a coach, right? Coach is more than a job. I'll say it's a job as well, but it's more than a job. It's a responsibility, right? And a lot of people take that responsibility for granted, because, you know, and they want to just make the money. But like how I interact with my athletes is the way that they're going to be developed, right? And so what the words I speak, the tone I set, the expectations I have for them should be one of giving, empowerment, inspiration, grit, and endurance, resilience, like all these things, like all these things that I embody, right? Over the years, I need to pass it on to everybody else. I need to bring value to someone else's life besides my own, because when you put that type of energy into the universe, things can't do nothing but get better. Like, you can't, and I don't know if it's a scientific rule. So
when your life is a mess and you're hanging out with, you know, people that are doing bad things because you think you're a badass, then that's what you're going to attract, and it will continue to perpetuate. And the same is also true, right? When you decide to hang out with champions who are leading their life, you know, exploring their potential and doing the work, that's what you're going to attract. Yeah. I mean, it's how it goes. So that's also a coach's job, right? Is to create a space where our fellow humans that we're working with or mentoring, whatever the dynamic might be, have an opportunity to explore themselves in that way. So we're giving them tools, but really we're creating the space, right, where it's even possible. What I always say is that a coach's job is to not only create an opportunity and a space for that human to develop themselves and their potential, but we have to believe in them more than they believe in themselves, because they generally come to the relationship with a lack of belief in themselves as humans, their worth, their sense of belonging, and ultimately their potential. And if we can create a space where we can nurture that, because we've got 200% of that we believe in them, we understand the potential and the opportunity, and eventually they meet us in the middle, right? And then they start really becoming. It's so cool, right? It's such, can you think of anything better to do with your life?
No, that's why I need, that's why I like, you know, I could stay in the Marine Corps, you know, and try to go to 30 years and get promoted one more time. I got one more level to achieve if I chose to stay.
Got it.
I don't want to though. It doesn't bring, like, I love the military. Don't get me wrong. Marine Corps has made me the man I am today. And it's put me in so many, it's taught me discipline. It's taught me, you know, organizational skills, leadership skills that like most people, even leaders that are in Fortune 500 companies can't touch. Right. I got young kids that are 20, 30 years old that outwork half these people out there that are making hundreds and thousands of dollars. And they do it for a penny on compared to that. Right. Mm-hmm. And I love that. But like I've evolved. Right. And I've come into my own and I've learned that like the Marine Corps or in the armed forces, no matter how necessary, is no longer the place that I need to be. Mm-hmm. The energy is about war. I understand the purpose, but I no longer want to be along for the ride. Mm-hmm. That's the easiest way to say that, right? And I know that endurance sports is a community of people trying to become more than they thought that was possible. Mm-hmm. And people are attracted to that. And that's where I want to be. I want to be in a place where people, they come to you for help because they want it, not because you're making them have it. Mm-hmm. Right. And I want a sense of freedom and just like that holistic view of life. And it feels good when you're helping other people, because like it's almost like I'm filling my own cup when I do that. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Wow.
That could be a long conversation. So
we're getting on to the next chapter of your life. You're retiring next spring.
Yeah.
Spring? Okay. Well, wow.
I feel like I'm retired already, but you know, whatever. I'm trying to let go up here. You know, physically I'm at work, but you gotta, you know, when you transition in your life, like the hardest thing most times, like even people like having coaches before then getting a new coach to hire me or never having a coach and hire me or doing another, you have to let go of what you used to do and learn how to do something else. Mm-hmm. It's hard because you have lived a certain life for so long, it gets ingrained into you. But that's the great thing about the mind and neuroplasticity, right? We can learn how to do different things, you know, over and over and over again, and there's nothing we can't do. So,
yeah. And the theme of this podcast is endurance is a state of mind. So let's dig into that together because it's probably our favorite subject in the world.
For sure.
Coaching you.
Mindset. Yes.
So your journey has allowed you to really explore not just your physical, you know, capabilities and potential. And you're continuing to do that. I know you've got a badass race coming up this next
year. Yes, ma'am.
We'll talk about that a little bit. But I want to ask you a couple questions about your mindset. So as along the way on this journey, developing your physical body, you also developed your mind. And what are some of the key lessons that you've learned up until this point through endurance sports that have allowed you to continue? So you're still on the journey. You know how many people do a 5K or a marathon or triathlon and it's bucket list?
Yeah.
And then they move on to the couch or somewhere else that's not really exploring their potential anymore, right?
Right.
That's not how we roll. So I want to know in your head, how have you continued to stay on the path and why are you still charging?
I'm going to say something. That's a really good question. That was a really, I'm thinking like, damn, like, you know, it makes me, and I've been on a lot of podcasts. So you get some, kind of some of the same things sometimes, but.
Not here, brother.
Yeah. That's a deep question because I don't want to talk too long, but at the same time, like it's some key elements, right? I learned, and let me see if I can put it in three different things.
Perfect.
I learned that anything is possible, right? That if there isn't a way, find one. Right.
Love
and
that.
Potential has always existed within me. I just didn't realize it.
Ah.
And I think that's for all of us, especially in endurance sports, because you start doing things, you're like, oh my God, I did that. What else can I do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think it's those things that kind of push me forward. And it is endurance sports. It was the first time I did, I don't think even with Ironmans, like it was. And I say this very humbly, people, whoever's listening, like, it wasn't hard, right? I mean, I'm a Marine, so I'd have done harder stuff. Like, that. Actually, like the Ironman, it was like, oh, it was a long ass hot day, right?
But
it was, but I've done other stuff where I'm like, I don't want to do this no more. And I don't know how to quit her. So, like, it's hard for them. But I went into, like, the more ultra stuff, and that's what Ironman is, like, kind of the start of the ultra triathlon, the full distance is. And so I went to the next level. I did Ultraman Florida and training for that. You get a lot of time by yourself when you go ultra, a whole lot of time, right? And I was like, I got to get on these treadmills. And I'm against headphones and stuff like that, right? And at that time, I was really against it. But now when I do longer stuff, I said, okay, I don't have to be against it. I just need to feed myself something valuable,
positive.
Right? Right.
Exactly.
And so I started doing audiobooks, right? Audiobooks and things like that, and podcasts or, you know, YouTube videos, whatever, depending on what I'm doing, you know, treadmill or on the bike or something like that. Mm-hmm. And what was that first book? It was Rich Roll, Finding Ultra, and Matt Fitzgerald, How Bad Do You Want It?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so I'm like,
they're talking to me.
Yeah. They just like, it's hard. Let's do it. And like all this stuff, and I'll tell you straight up, like, and people listen, like, I don't like doing all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I like the growth.
Ah.
Right. And you can't
you
get
don't
it.
Like the you grind. You like.
Yeah. I don't. I first want to tell you, I don't like running, biking, or swimming. I do those things because that's the way I peel back my own onion. Yeah. I enjoy them to the point where it brings value to my soul.
That's right. That's right.
Right. Like, you know, people say, oh, you don't like it. I do. Like, you went to school. You didn't like that, but you still got a degree. So I've chosen to go a different route on how I, you know, I've learned it's like, this is what I need to find myself. I need a lot of time in the pain cave, fighting off those demons and those mental gremlins that you have trying to pull you back into a really dark place. And that's where I become stronger. That's where I become more enlightened. It's almost, that's why I got the nickname Ghetto Buddha, right? Like, cause when I go to these places of peace, even though like, I know you know this, like you ever been in pain, but not feel it. Nope. Right. You've been in a real, and people don't understand. That's ultra, right? Oh, it's almost like you transcend what's literally possible and you leave this earth. And it's something that you have to, I think that's why people do in ultra stuff is because you have to put yourself, whatever that looks like for you, in a place that literally challenges the fabric of who you are.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Outside and then that's of the physical. Right. Mm-hmm. So you have to depart the physical body, even though you're actually in the middle of moving your physical body, however many miles, doing whatever it is you're doing. There's some kind of separation that happens.
Yeah.
And you leave that physical on the ground experience. I've literally had it where I'm like floating over myself, watching myself run through the mountains or run through the deserts. But I'm seeing myself down there doing the running and I'm up here having this whole other perspective. I mean, it's magical, right? Like that's what we're doing. And yeah. So for you, you transitioned into ultra because you wanted to continue the growth. And it wasn't about the swimming, biking, running, which triathlon's your current thing. Who knows what you'll do with the rest of your life? You're just a young man. There's plenty of adventures to be had. But in terms of setting a mindset, and I wouldn't even say setting it, like mindset to me is training. So it's like there's a mental gym just as much as there's a physical gym. Facts. Right. And if we're not training our brain, and also to me, it's emotions in your heart, right? It's all conjoined, your thoughts, your emotions, your feelings. If you're not training that part of who you are as an individual and you're just training the physical body, you're never going to reach your potential because the limits of your physical body will bail before your brain does, or your brain will tell you, you can't do it. And so your body will listen, which is also untruth, right?
Yeah.
So for yourself, give me some examples of what has been a real hard low spot, like if you've been in a race or in a training session where like the wheels fell off the bus and you worked through it.
That's
or has it not happened yet?
I think that's what I'm looking for.
You're still chasing it.
I think I was close at Ultraman, right? It was just the bike, kind of the second day bike, kind of like I was in a dark place, but it was my nutrition. Right. And I was like, man, I thought about, I didn't want to fail because I didn't want to let people down. Right. And so I told people to call my nutritionist, and he said, give him a banana and then see what happens. They gave me a banana. I was like, superpowers. I was like, oh, hell yeah. This is like, I was just low in, because I've been, you talk about the first day was a 6.2 mile swim and a 90 mile bike ride. Right. And I didn't put enough potassium back in the second day. Mm-hmm. And so I started to feel like then once I did that, like my power came up, I started passing people. Right. I'm talking about coming in last and passing people and not being last then. Right. And finishing that day in was 171 miles in.
Yeah, 11 hours. Something out here. It's the sports nutrition is critical in fueling your body and doing the training. That, like the physical aspect is really important. You know, it cannot be ignored or overlooked. But plenty of people have a negative physical experience. You know, they bonk, they get cramps, they are puking, they're pooping. Once you move into ultras, you know, it all happens. It's just, you know, you see it all out there and you experience it all. But for a lot of people, that would be a time to pull the plug, right?
Yeah. I mean, you just fix it and keep going. I don't know. Like I make it sound easier than it is, people, but like, it's hard for me to even say that, because when people ask me that question, people take it in a way, like I think they think that I'm saying I'm better than you or I don't go through things. We can talk about other areas in my life where I am challenged mentally to like no extent. And that has nothing to do with endurance racing. But endurance racing, I literally haven't found that thing that was like, you ain't gonna be able to do this.
Try to bury
it. Yeah, I haven't. And I think ultra of this next race is that that's what.
Let's get into it.
It scares the shit out of me, actually.
Yeah! Okay, tell me all about it. Let's talk about it.
It's called Epic Deca, and I'll be doing in May of 2022. I'll be doing 10 Ironmans back to back for 10 days in Hawaii. And it's going to be on different islands. So the distance itself, it doesn't seem undoable to me at all. It's the elements of the logistics and nature. Like these two things you have no control over.
That's right.
Because you're dealing with, you know, one is Mother Nature and God, mm-hmm. if you, whatever you believe in, right? And then the other one is people controlling flights and stuff like that and getting on and making sure I'm having enough time to get to the airport to fly and get my bike on. And like, it's just two other pieces that you can't really control. Like you have no control over what's going to happen with equipment and stuff like that.
That's right.
Physically, I just need to keep moving. Right. Yeah. I understand that I will finish, but I'm saying I ain't going to stop until my body gives out. I can tell you that much.
That's right.
And so, you know, you're like, oh, you didn't finish where you only did five. Okay, well, damn, I'm sorry, I only did five Ironman. Or if I do two, right? Like,
whatever.
Or one, right? One, like, because it's still more than somebody else. I still put myself in a place because most people, where they know they may fail something, they don't even try. That's big thing about endurance sports, right?
That's right.
I'm going to go do it anyway. I'm going to see what it is. It's like, you know, I'm this guy from that just rides and runs. And if I see a pro athlete, I want to see how fast you can go. Let's race. Well, everybody knows I'm going to lose, but I don't know that. Well, let's see. Like, I want to know what that looked like. Like, beat me, right? And, you know, and so I want to test the waters. I want when I have a sore, I poke at it because I want to feel it.
Mm.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I want to feel alive. And it sounds crazy, but like, I don't like going fast. That hurts. I don't like that though. That's not a hurt. The hurt, the long endurance hurt is like more of my speed. And it just takes it to another place. And I think this race is going to do all those things. You know, it's going to challenge all those things. And it's going to put me in a place where, you know, when I make it to day five or six, this is one of those races, like, you know, it's not like, hey, I'm gonna go do the Ironman. They said, I'm gonna go attempt 10 Ironmans. Like, this is the whole thing. Like, no, you gotta say you're gonna do it. I said, but I'll be lying to myself because I can't guarantee that. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Yeah. I'm just kidding, that's too much on my body. I've never put myself through that much stress. Mm-hmm. I can't even tell you if I'm gonna survive day two because mm-hmm. my body has never done two Ironmans back to back. I can tell you one is gonna be. It's gonna be a walk in the damn park, actually. It's an Ironman, right? But like two and three, every day after one will be a new experience. And I had to take it for what it is. But every day, think about that. If you could do something and you knew you could grow every day for 10 days and become a better version of yourself, would you do it?
That's a hell yes. That's where I'm at right now, right? Quarantining in Australia for 1,000 miles to light. Part of Team USA. So I'll run 250 miles. I've never run 250 miles in my life.
Exactly.
But it's a 10-day. So I will get up every day for 10 days and keep running until we get the job done with my Team USA.
Yeah. Or till the body says, fuck it.
I can't even think of a better opportunity for growth and a place I'd rather be right now in this moment. And you're going to feel the exact same way in Hawaii. It's what you said, though. You said, if I have a sore, I want to poke at it, right? If something hurts, I want to poke at it and see what happens next. Why is that? Why is exploring your edges so important to you?
It teaches me a level of control within my soul. And not a control in where I want to make things happen. It's like a level of control of my mind where I can take it to a place where it transcends reality. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I want to, when I look at, like, when some people put it this way, it's easy, right? When you look at like a metal object or a pole or something, you're like, oh, that's not alive. Well, when I look at it, I see life. Energy. When I see this computer, I see energy, right? Because it takes something to hold it together. Something has to be active, because if the molecules were not active on a cellular level or atomic level, they wouldn't be able to bind. That's just mm-hmm. basic science, right? Yep. And so everything around us is literally living, mm-hmm. right? Okay. And it took Endurance Force to show me that. When I look at the trees, I see a living, breathing thing, right? Or any, like, I will still kill bugs and stuff if it's by my babies. I don't play no games, because I also would kill a human being if it was messing with my babies too. So, like, that's two different things. But I see it a different way. Like, I try to make sure, like, I'd rather try to pick it up and put it outside or move something over. And it's like, let's not interrupt something that we don't understand, right? And I think the Endurance Force has done that to me and helped me see something within the universe. So, like, I really believe that I'm developing a superpower, that I am becoming energy and being able to see energy. And then I stare at things, I want to prompt it. And you ever seen superheroes, like, they try to make their powers work and it just doesn't work because they're trying to force it instead of going to a place within themselves where they can actually be one with it? It's like swimming or running. When you fight it, it doesn't work. But when you find a way to work with it, that's when the magic happens. And that's what I want to do in life.
The definition of true power.
Yeah.
It's not control. That's what it's power, right? So that power only comes from one place. It's inside you.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Never had this type of conversation before. So, because I get deeper, but, like, you know, sometimes I think I'm crazy without some of the stuff that I say. But, like,
why do you think we get along so well?
Yeah, but, like, there's some people, because when you start thinking like that about energy and stuff like that, like, I'm not a hippie dude, like, I'm not, but I know that everything has a purpose, everything is built for a reason, we come from something, it's put together with something, and that if at some point of evolution, it might not be now, but it might not be 100 years from now, it could be 1,000 years from now, as we evolve, we're able to do amazing things. Mm-hmm. So the one could say that we might be able to have telepathy or some type of, you know, object control, or be able to, like, see it deeper into somebody's, you know, x-ray vision or all these different things. I say crazy stuff like that, but, like, it's just being able to, like, do bigger things. Yeah. But just like with anything in life, if you don't try, you will never know. And so those people that continue to try is the people that made this microphone, that put on this internet, that made this computer, right? It wasn't possible till it was. And if no one ever challenges the status quo, how will you know if it's even possible? And so you have to think about that for yourself as well. If you never challenge what you think is impossible, how can you ever know what you're achieving, what you are possible to achieve? You can't. You're wasting your life just existing when life is here and you have so many gifts that you have chose to let be stagnant and let everybody else use the world and wonder why you don't feel like you're living. It's just not possible. You have to look beyond what you see to be who you want to be, right? I should write that one down. That was actually pretty good. You have to look beyond what you see to be who you want to be.
That's right. That's right.
That's the key, right? Yeah. And so if we take everything in life at face value, there's no growth.
That's right.
But if you look at everything, it's like, man, what is the potential? The biggest thing is, like, don't judge, be curious. And if you just have a little bit of curiosity in everything you do, you'll learn so much more.
And in other human beings.
Yeah.
You know, I want to talk for a couple minutes about, we've been, 18 months now or something in this pandemic experience, all of us collectively. I call it the collective pause.
Yeah.
And so I want to know for you, how has your mental state been during this time? How have you fared?
Fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I got bored. Like you see a lot of you. So when people ask that question, I'm assuming they base it off like whatever everything else everybody else has went through. Like I've lost some people and stuff like that, but that's life. Like it doesn't feel good, but it's something I can do anything about. I can't do what I can do. I wrote a book during the time. I talked to more people, like hundreds of people during that time. And so instead of going, woe is me, I figured out, how could I bring more value to myself and others? I just looked at it differently. COVID is something that I can't do anything about, but be safe and protect my family, but also protect my mental state. Like I did get bored, but like I spent more time with my family than I ever had before. Mm-hmm. I was able to do things that I never probably would have done. Right? I didn't travel, so I was always home. I was able to see my daughter grow. I was able to see to do things with them and to see what my wife does when I'm not home, right? To be able to respect that more. And so instead of, there were a lot of people that were rooted in like, oh my God, I don't have this, I don't have that. But like, guess what? Even before the pandemic and after, it's a possibility that you won't have those things. Mm-hmm. Like racing is the biggest one that we, let's talk about that. Like people are like, oh my God, I can't race or this. I said, and I tell people, if your purpose and your why was the race, then it's your fault you feel the way you do, because you put your trust and your soul into something that you can't guarantee is going to always be there. Right. If you're getting fit for you for the right reasons, your purpose never changes.
Well, never and what changes. Is a race? What is a race? A race is an opportunity to perform.
That's it.
It's an opportunity to check yourself competitively against the competition, against others. How important is that at the end of the day? Honestly,
it ain't. Right? it ain't that important.
We're racing ourselves to the grave. You know, I mean, it's there's so much more to it than that. And yeah. You're right. I think that was a good reality check for a lot of us. A lot of people without a race to train for, stopped training, didn't have motivation, couldn't find the drive, couldn't find a way to connect with people outside of their sport, because a lot of, gyms and then fitness clubs and running clubs and all that, went on pause. And I think to me, it was pure grace, the opportunity that we were given to take a look around and take a freaking inventory of what were we doing? How are we spending our time? How are we investing in ourselves and in others? What did our lives really look like? That whole busy, 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 busy life that we had going on. And for a moment, I hope everybody took it. Moment's gone on pretty long here, that people really took an opportunity to do that. And I know you did too. We've had some conversations about it, personal reflection and inventory is part of developing as a human being. Right. So how would you advise some of our audience out in the world? A lot of them are endurance athletes or have an endurance lifestyle of some sort. Coming out of the pandemic, like in the States, and in particular, I'm in California. I know you're in North Carolina. We don't have it anywhere near as bad, by the way, as the globe does. So that's a reality check in itself. But how would you advise people out there in the world to start making a comeback? What do you think that's going to look like for them? And how can you advise them as a coach to open that door back up and step into it?
Well, the first thing I always tell people when they start talking about what I don't have or what I can't do or how bad it is like, I said, look at what you do have. Look at how far you have come. Look at what everything you have accomplished up until this point. There are many things in life that we've done that we didn't think were possible, but we did them, right? My mom probably didn't think she would ever make it through the time when we were in the shelters, but we were, right? And look who I am today because of that, right? And so there are going to be many things in life and the many dark moments in life and in racing that are going to present the question, do I keep going or do I give up? And I think that question is healthy because every time it gives us a choice to decide who we want to become. And when you're given that choice, right? And say, what do I want to do? I want you to say one thing to yourself. you are enough. That's it. You don't need anything. You don't need anybody. Everything that you need, you already possess. You just have to believe you do. Mm-hmm. That's the key. That's how you endure, right? Mm-hmm. Not that you say, oh, I don't have something or something from somebody else. That's not endurance. Endurance is the fire that is lit within you that you continue to basically prep the flame, right? You put more gasoline, you put more wood on it, whatever you do, however it is. And in those dark moments, stop looking about what you don't have and really appreciate what you've already done in your life. And then take that and remind yourself that you are enough. You just got to believe it.
Mm. So freaking true. So yeah. True. That was beautifully said. Thank you.
I'll try.
Before we wrap up this party, I have a question for you.
Okay.
My friend, Morgan, what does endurance mean to you?
Mm. Yeah, I knew that was coming, but I don't know what I still don't know how to answer.
All right. Take a breath. What does endurance mean to you?
Endurance means holistic fitness, right? Mind, body, and emotions. If we are to be or to endure or be resilient or to have grit, then we must learn how to forego hard things, right? We must learn how to step in the fire and walk through it instead of backing up. I think that endurance is us challenging what we think impossible. Mm. And as long as we continue to do that, we will continue to grow. As long as we do that, we'll continue to see growth in others. And as long as we do that, the world will be a better place. We just have to continue to move forward, because forward is a pace.
Yes, it is, my friend. Yeah. Okay, beautiful human, author, coach, podcast, badass Marine. Tell us where people can find you, follow you, see what your shenanigans do.
Well, I mean, if you want to look for coaching or speaking engagements or things like that, working events and stuff, you can go to morganlattimore.com. That's Morgon, not Morgan. Okay. My name is spelled with two O's, not an A. So morganlattimore.com, and you can find me on Instagram at Coach Morgan Lattimore. Follow me, right? And, you know, I'll dance in the car some days. I'll give you inspiration some days, and I'll just show you how to live, you know, a fruitful, positive life and not do it just for yourself, but do it for everybody around you. So.
Mm. And they can buy your books there. And next correct. Year, mm-hmm. we'll be able to follow this insane 10 Ironmans in 10 days adventure with you, because
yeah.
you're going to need some cheerleaders. I'm just saying. Okay.
All y'all come to Hawaii and cheer me on every day.
That would be fantastic. Okay, my love, it's been a pleasure. So good to see you again. And I can't wait till we're in person. I believe this September. Oh, yes. My goodness gracious. In Flagstaff, yes. Arizona at the Chosky Retreat.
Chosky yes, Insurance yes.
Collective, since we're both part of that. People maybe want to come and join us there. I don't know. It's a thing.
Come out. It's going to be fun. We're going to have a great time. Anywhere I go.
Anywhere I go. Anywhere we go.
So that we put that together. Boom. Right. Ooh. One and one equals two. Right. That's how we're going to get down. Two amazing human beings doing amazing things and having an amazing time. So come on out.
Can't wait to see you. Thank you for your time.
Always. Always.
Alrighty. See you next round.
Thank you for connecting with us for this episode of the Endurance Town USA Project. Discover more about today's guest, along with other great stories and video projects, by visiting us online at endurancetownusa.com. You can also follow us for updates and behind-the-scenes peeks at future episodes on Instagram at endurancetownusa. You can also connect with our creator, host, and life leadership and business coach, Samantha Pruitt, at samanthapruitt.com or on Instagram at thesamanthapruitt. And lastly, you can follow me, Travis Ford, producer and marketing creative at rockharbormarketing.com or Instagram at rockharbormarketing. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time we go on an adventure to Endurancetown, USA.
Bring it back.